You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with RAFA, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today, we're in Mont Ventoux.
Richie, what happened? What happened there?
The motorbike just stopped right in front of us.
Was that a fan as well?
I don't know. What the hell happens now?
Because of?
The motorbike crashed us.
Oh shit, no, we didn't know that.
This can't be right, huh?
No.
Well, that was Richie Port just after he crossed the finish line at Mont Ventoux today, meeting his press officer who didn't know what had happened in the closing stages of today's stage in the Tour de France. Lionel, where are we?
Well, we're now in a square in Orange, about an hour's drive down the mountain. Earlier on, though, we were at Chalet Reynard, 6 kilometres from the top of Mont Ventoux, where stage 12 of the Tour de France finished from Montpellier to Mont Ventoux. And of course, if anyone doesn't know, the stage was shortened by 6 kilometres because the wind was blowing very strongly up there, wasn't it?
And it really was.
And that had all sorts of knock-on effects for the race today, didn't it?
Where do you start? We're not going to do the tale of the etape today because this podcast will be the tale of the etape. We'll hear from Richie Port. We'll hear from Garrett Thomas, Dave Brailsford, Tom Dumoulin talking about the time trial tomorrow if we've got space for that, and someone else.
Alistair Campbell.
A bit weird.
Yeah,
anyway,
random interview.
Anyway, what a day it has been for the tour. What a weird tour it has been in a lot of ways because it's not the first incident that there has been, which is cast the tour in a pretty poor light. And today it was the final kilometre. Chris Froome, Richie Port and Malcolm Mollema had broken clear from most of the other favourites who were 23 seconds behind going to the final kilometre. To explain some of the challenges today, which were numerous, we were at the top of the mountain. We were watching the stage at the side of the Lotto Soudal team bus. They had a screen embedded in their bus and we were watching it there. There were no press facilities at the top. There were no screens showing the race at all. So we were trying to watch it on Dutch TV. We didn't see the actual incident where a motorbike stopped in front of that group of three and Richie Port slammed into it. Chris Froome hit Richie Port and then was hit himself by a motorbike and his bike was broken. So we were watching it and we saw that a BMC rider had a problem. I was standing beside Daniel Freeb who said, well, that's TJ Van Garderen. Obviously, it's TJ. And the camera went back to the chase. Then the camera went to Chris Froome running up the mountain. And I don't think I'll ever forget that surreal sight. It was completely, and there's been a lot of bizarre things happen at the Tour over the years. This was the most bizarre thing I have ever seen.
Yeah, I think the most bizarre thing I've ever seen at the Tour de France. I mean, I thought the kilometre to go inflatable collapsing and sending Adam Yates head over heels at Lac de Payolle in the Pyrenees was extraordinary, but this was remarkable. As you say, Rich, we had no idea what had actually happened.
I didn't know you could run in cycling shoes either.
It was a good effort, really. It was a good effort.
That's what I said. If he had swimming, it's triathlon, here we come.
We shouldn't make too much light of it, although it's obviously...
He didn't look too happy, I have to say. I mean, he didn't speak to the press after he was eventually presented with his yellow jersey when the commissars eventually came to a decision. It took a long, long, long time, and we'll come to that a little bit later. But he was ashen-faced. He was not happy at all. It will take him a while to see the funny side, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Richard, you heard Geraint Thomas's immediate reaction when Thomas saw pictures.
Well, he was showing a picture of Froome running, and he said, what do you think of that? And he laughed, and he said, well, I'm paraphrasing here. He said, well, he is from Kenya. You'd expect him to be good at that.
But really, not a laughing matter for Chris Froome, Richie Port, or Malcolm Mollema, or the Tour de France. But I think to understand why this has happened, you have to look at the shortening of the stage. And as you said, Rich, the whole Tour de France infrastructure, which is so huge, only just really fits up at the top of Mont Ventoux, doesn't it? But to move down the mountain to Chalet Reynard, it was all very tight. It was a much scaled back operation. Obviously, they didn't have anything high up because they knew the winds would be strong. So there was no sort of big finish line banner. And when we drove up the climb in the afternoon and the crowds, I mean, the first thing we said when we got to Bedouin was how big the crowds were in the town. And the thing that occurred to us as we were going up, we were picking our way through the crowds. People were sitting in the road, lots of cyclists still riding up. Heavy police presence, I have to say. I mean, there were a lot of gendarmes on the climb, but it was very, very busy. And the thing that struck us was that all of the people that would have gone up to the top of the mountain planning to watch on the moonscape part of Mont Ventoux would have to move down the mountain and squeeze into a shorter section of road. And so the forest section was busy because of the way the tour organisers had to react quite quickly to move the finish line. There weren't the usual barriers up, were there? It wasn't barriered for the last sort of 2K that you would normally see on a mountain stage.
No, it's like a fun-sized Ventoux stage. And, you know, we've said it a few times already on this tour, and Peter Stettinat, after the stage, came out with some pretty strong comments about spectators dressed in fancy costumes. And I saw more of those than usual today. Those are people dressed like that to get on telly. And if you want to get on telly, the way to get on telly is to get onto the road, the field of play, as it were. And that's a big problem because, as you have said, Lionel, the riders are the show. The spectators are the backdrop to the show, and it only took one today to hold up a motorbike, you know. And we've seen it before, you know. Remember in 1992, Sage de Sestriere, Claudio Chiappucci was away on his own, so it didn't matter so much. He was on his own, the motorbikes were held up in front of him, he had to weave his way around them, and that was chaos, and he was being pursued at the time by Miguel Indurain, and it was dramatic. And he was waving spectators out of the way. That was just excitement that was causing the problems there. It's not excitement now. It's actually people wanting to be on camera.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to be too much of a killjoy the other day when we were talking about Chris Froome getting a 200 Swiss franc fine for laying a hand on a spectator. He lashed out at a spectator who got too close, and Froome said that the spectator's flag was close to his bike and, you know, could have caught in his front wheel. But clearly the issue is not going away. It's not getting any better. And these incidents do seem to be becoming more numerous. And I mean, the crazy thing today was in the sort of aftermath of what was going on, there was a spectator full in the middle of the road holding up some kind of sign written on a piece of cardboard. It appeared to have the word Mica written on it for Rafał Majka. I don't know whether that was a Rafał Majka fan, but it was really extraordinary that this guy was sort of standing in the middle of the road when the Tour de France is coming past. His role is to stand to the side and watch the race come past, not stand in front of the TV motorbike.
Absolutely. Let's hear again from Richie Porte, who was one of the guys caught in the crash. Here's what he had to say once he was back at the team bus on the turbo trainer, warming down and calming down a little bit.
The crowd was just all on the road and the motorway just stopped right in front of us. We had nowhere to go. And next minute, straight over the top of the motorbike, it was just a mess. Like, I mean, he's on my wheel, like, straight into me. And, you know, I don't know what they're going to do, but they need to do something about it because it's not fair, you know. 1 minute, we're 23 seconds in front, and the next thing, you know, for something so silly, you know, everybody's back on us. I mean, that can't stand. It can't happen like that. I mean, surely the jury has to look at it and use some sort of discretion because, I mean, if you can't control the crowds, what can you control, you know?
And just on the wider issue, this is not the first time this year, is it, that motorbikes have caused problems?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really the motorbikes, is it? It's the crowd. I mean, they're just in your face the whole time, you know, pushing riders at the top there. I mean, that was just crazy.
Well, it was a chaotic day. Richie Porte didn't know when he came over the line really what was going to happen with the race results. We didn't know. We were piecing it together. As I say, the whole infrastructure was scaled down, so there was no big screens up there for anyone to watch. So it really was old school reporting, wasn't it? Going around talking to and listening in to as many people as possible. I mean, Malcolm Olimer, who was sent flying as well, I heard what he had to say at the finish, and his reaction was one of, you know, the sense of chaos and just the priority to get back on the bike, get to the finish line as quickly as possible. He was asked whether it was correct for him to ride on, and he said he wasn't trying to gain time on Chris Froome or anybody. He was just trying to get over the line and knowing that the results would be sorted out afterwards, and that is what happened. They took the time between the groups at the point that the incident happened, or just before the point that the incident happened, and so it's a funny old world, but Chris Froome's advantage is actually greater tonight than it would have been. Adam Yates, who was initially announced to be the race leader, is not in a yellow jersey, and it's a weird one, isn't it? Because what goes round comes round. He gained the white jersey in the Pyrenees as a result of the jury looking at the results after he'd hit that collapsing banner, and they did the right thing that day, and I think they did the right thing today, didn't they?
Don't think they could have done anything else, really. It's just so unfortunate, you know. I mean, we will never know whether the group behind would have clawed back a bit of time or whether Froome would have taken more time. And we're not talking about the significance of the fact that Froome, Mollema and Port rode away from Nairo Quintana, who he sent Alejandro Valverde up the road early on the climb, and then he had a few goes himself, but none of them were really sticking, and it didn't, and it doesn't look great at this stage for Quintana. We're used to him getting stronger as the race goes on, but to not be able to stay with Froome today was a really bad sign for him. And there are cracks in his armour, aren't there? I mean, he was complained after the crosswind stage yesterday, or the flat stage, about how dangerous it was, and our friend and colleague Francois Thomas will joke that they should take flat, if the flat stages are too dangerous, every tour stage should just start at the bottom of Alpe d'Huez and finish at the top. Is one solution to that. And that, you know, that, those were the signs of a man who was losing it a little bit, you know, losing the sort of mental battle as well as the on the road battle. So not great for Nairo Quintana, not great for the race, you know, if we want this to be a suspenseful race. Richie Port looks incredibly strong, and it's a shame that he lost that minute and 40 seconds. Bauke Mollema is really looking good as well. A bad day for Dan Martin, a bad day for Thomas De Gendt to win a stage.
Yeah.
And there was a lot else that happened today as well. You know, there was a moment earlier where Ian Stannard and Luke Rowe crashed. Froome appeared to wait for them, and Movistar at the same time seemed to be driving at the front, and there was a question there about whether that was the right thing to do. So there was lots going on in the race today, and inevitably we're talking about the I don't know, what do we call it, Rungate.
Yeah.
I mean, the Froome's bike went missing in all this. Yeah. He's abandoned his bike, and I spoke to his mechanic Gary Blehm at the finish, who said that he didn't know where it was. I said, "How's his bike?" He says, "I don't know where it is." And then about half an hour later, I saw Carson Jeppesen, who works for Team Sky as well, and his mechanic with the bike. And I followed them up a little hill, and there was the bike, and the seat stay had been sheared right through. But it was being taken away by UCI inspectors to be checked for a motor. So they had to go and stand while this was being done, and I got shooed away after I'd taken a couple of photographs. But surreal, bizarre. Let's hear from Geraint Thomas, because I spoke to him at the finish as well. Here's what Geraint Thomas had to say.
I didn't see it, obviously. I've just seen something on the TV for like 10 seconds when I got on the bus. But, you know, not ideal. You know, I think for me it was on a decent day. But from my point of view, the crowd were getting super close and stuff. But like I said, I didn't see what happened up in front.
Has it been particularly bad this year?
No, it's been normal. It's been as usual. It's been, you know, the odd person getting too close, but that's normal. But obviously what happened today, it's unprecedented, really.
And knowing Chris, if he has lost the time, we think he's lost, presumably he'll just dust himself off and come back fighting.
Yeah, well, everyone's seen he's got good legs and he's a fighter, so if he does lose however much time, he'll be all guns blazing tomorrow to get that back.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
And now, Pedaleur du Charme.
Thank you very much to Eurosport for sponsoring the cycling podcast and sponsoring our Pedaleur du Charme award, daily award. I actually overruled David Miller's decision last night, which was to give it to Tosato from Tinkoff. That seemed slightly bizarre. I think he was trying to sabotage our podcast.
Ah.
So I overruled that and decided on Bastille Day it should go to the French champion, Arthur Vichot. So I presented that him with that this morning. Today's Pedaleur du Charme, I mean, lots of nominations for Chris Froome.
Well, he wasn't pedalling very charmingly when he was on the Mavic emergency bike, the neutral service bike, which he grabbed in an emergency, bright yellow bike, and was riding that. It looked a bit too small for him, didn't it? I mean,
frog on a skateboard again. But yeah, odd that he ran. I mean, I've never seen that before. I know it was the final kilometre.
Imagine the panic. You've just hit the ground.
I would have probably taken my shoes off for that. Well, you know, but on a serious note, cyclists are so, their muscles are so tuned to cycling and a non-impact sport, that run, I think he'll have sore legs tomorrow, really sore legs, because he'll be using muscles that he doesn't normally use.
And running in very stiff carbon fibre soled shoes with cleats on the bottom as well, not comfortable.
Well, and for a substantial way. I mean, I was watching it just with my heart in my mouth thinking, this is surreal and bizarre. And it was sort of, I don't know, it was bizarre. It was like seeing Usain Bolt on a bike.
Indeed, but to go back to your point, I mean, what else could he have done? It was such chaos. There was no room for the bikes to get through, let alone the team cars. I mean, he could have been stood there waiting for goodness knows how long. His priority was to get over the line as quickly as possible, knowing that on the mountain stages, the 3 kilometre rule doesn't count. Okay, in a calm, rational moment, he might think, well, this has been an extraordinary incident. They will definitely neutralise the results. But he has no way of really thinking that at the time that it's happening, and his instinct was to get to the finish line as quickly as possible, turn round, his bike wasn't there, so he started running. I mean, what would you have done? I'd have done the same, I think.
Yeah, the final kilometre maybe, but you would normally see a rider sort of standing exasperated at the side of the road, kind of screaming, and yeah, it was a good bit of improvisation, I guess.
Yeah, because the Tour de France could have been going away from him in that moment, because as I say, there was no way of guaranteeing that the results would be neutralised.
Okay,
and the time would be given back.
Chris Froome is our pedalar de charme for today, but I'm also going to award an extra one to Mark Cavendish for sterling bottle duty today. Again, you know, shows his qualities as a teammate. He collected a lot of bottles, and fair play to Mark Cavendish. He's been nominated many times for this unseen work he does in the mountains. So Mark Cavendish as well.
And I must say, I was surprised that he was on the start line today, because there's a time trial on Friday tomorrow and a long shot of a sprint stage perhaps to Montélimar, I think, on Saturday. Is it to Montélimar? I can't remember where it goes, but it's not a given that it will be a sprint. So the fact he's still in the race with the Rio Olympics just around the corner is a little bit of a surprise, perhaps.
A worthy winner.
Indeed.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast, in association with Rafa. Whoever you are, wherever you ride, whatever the reason, Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses and communities all over the world. See rafa.cc for more information.
Thank you very much to Rafa for sponsoring us at the Tour de France. We saw a Rafa van up Mont Ventoux today, didn't we?
We did, a Citroën H van, their sort of trademark Citroën H van, the one with the sliding door. In the 60s and 70s, it would have been a baker's van or a... you see them in London now as florists and coffee vans, don't you, as well? Mm. Nice vehicles.
We ran a competition last night to win a copy of Paul Smith's cycling scrapbook for your best jersey nominee. What's your favourite jersey and a reason for it? Still sifting through those. It's been quite a dramatic day. One nomination for the Canyon SRAM jersey, the women's team, which is of course made by Rafa, so that might win it, because we're not at all compromised. Just any Rafa jersey might win it. I'm only joking. A few entries for Lavie Clare, which is a classic and certainly would be my choice. There's a text message just come in there from Daniel Freeb to say no Freeboss file tonight. It's been a dramatic day for him as well.
It has. I mean, it was dramatic up there, Rich, wasn't it? I mean, I can't remember covering a tour stage like that. The sense of shock, the sense of bewilderment. It was chaotic at the finish, wasn't it? People dashing here and there. And as I say, and the atmosphere was very strange, because obviously everyone knew something bad had happened for the race. And people were being quite careful, I think, about, you know, not jumping to knee-jerk reactions. I think certainly Dave Brailsford kept very calm.
Not everybody was stressed out by it, though, were they, Lionel?
Not everybody was stressed out by it.
Well, you saw Fabian Cancellara pulling away in his team.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was a big traffic jam to get over the Ventoux and down the other side. All the team buses had to go over the top and down. And as the Trek Segafredo bus pulled away, Fabian Cancellara was sitting in the front passenger seat swigging a beer. Looked very relaxed, very laid back.
And at the top, we had to drive over the top. And, you know, the stage was obviously shortened because of the winds at the top. And we can confirm that there's no way the race could have gone up there. There was a caravan on its side. Yeah. There was a motorbike on its side. There were three people trying to get it back up. It was a bit like after that flower pot that I knocked over in the car yesterday. And just trying to get it back up was...
Yeah, know, the, I mean,
quite a struggle.
Absolutely correct decision by the tour organisers. I mean, they could have got very unlucky. They could have cancelled the top part of the stage and then found that it was perfectly still today. But that wasn't the case. It was very, very windy and particularly blustery. And even where we were at Chalet Reynard, there were strong winds, weren't there? It was not pleasant, really, to be there. And it was not, you know, it was not pleasant to ride in, I'm sure. And as I say, it was the problem on the mountain was that it turned into a corridor. It got very, very narrow, particularly through the sections where the road became narrow. And it's difficult to say now, just a few hours afterwards, what the tour organisers could have done, because really the only alternative is to cancel the stage entirely and say we're not going anywhere up Mont Ventoux. This was the compromise option. And it's not to blame, you know, the decision to not put the barriers out for the usual 2K. It's not to blame the fans for all congregating, because what else were they going to do? It's not pointing the finger of blame, but the decision to shorten the stage had directly knocked on, I think. I mean, because the crowd would have been thinner at that point. It would, and then further up, there would have been barriers.
And somebody taking a similarly sort of pragmatic and calm view, at least that's what he told us, was Dave Brailsford. Here's what he had to say at the finish after it had been announced that Chris Froome would be keeping the yellow jersey.
So, Dave, Chris is in yellow, but a very unsatisfactory day.
Oh, no, I wouldn't say so. I think, you know, sometimes exceptional things happen and sometimes it's a chance to get all agitated and angry, and sometimes it's better to be calm and just, you know, let the dust settle on things. And I think that wasn't intentional. You know, it's an exceptional circumstance. I don't think any of us have ever seen that before. And I think everybody would agree that they were, you know, Richie, Bowker and Chris were the strongest riders there today. And so I think, you know, we used to the 3K rule in cycling, and I think it was the right thing to do to give him the time. I think it was the same time as Bowker, actually, when he finished. So nobody saw that one coming, but it's, you know, it's one of those things, isn't it? You want to try and win the yellow jersey, you've got to go through thick and thin, I guess.
Did you have to argue your case? I mean, it took a long time for them to make a decision.
Fair play to the ASO and the UCR commissaires. You know, I think everybody understood straight away that it was an exceptional circumstance, and fair play should rule the day, as it were. So,
what's the answer though? More barriers?
Well, I'm not going to get drawn on that just yet. I think, you know, until we see fully, you know, nobody's intentionally done anything there today, for sure. You know, you know, the finish has been changed, the weather's been played a part, and it's a massive event logistically for the ASO. We understand how challenging it is, and I don't think it's the opportunity to point fingers. I think it's more a moment for a bit of calm and a bit of maturity, and everybody just calm down. And I think the right decision was taken, and let's focus on the race and crack on tomorrow, and hope we don't see that again.
Well, while we were waiting for the official results or the outcome of the stage, because it was about an hour and a half after they'd crossed the line, and we still weren't sure whether Chris Froome would be in yellow or Adam Yates would be in yellow, and they hadn't done the podium presentations. Peter Sagan had his green jersey. Thomas de Gendt, Lotto Soudal rider, who unfortunately we barely mentioned, pulled off a great win, really. He got his bouquet for winning the stage and the polka dot jersey as the new king of the mountains, but there was no award of the yellow jersey or the white jersey until the jury had had a good look at the video and worked out exactly what they were going to do. And I spotted Alistair Campbell, a big cycling fan, friend of Dave Brailsford's.
Always at Mont Ventoux, isn't he?
Always at Mont Ventoux. I believe owns a holiday home somewhere in Provence, not far away. And sorry,
on.
Very dis- very.
Oh, hello, sorry. We just
friend of the
who are you? Sorry,
I'm Andy Loveland from Shifnal,
and this is Scott. There's a big group of you here.
Yeah. Scott,
hello, Scott.
We're the Shifnal Cycling Society.
Nice. Have you had a nice day up Mont Ventoux?
We went to Bedouin.
Bedouin today. We went to Ventoux yesterday. Okay. Windy.
It was quite windy.
We listened to your podcast on the way down, but William Fotherington was saying, you know, life was going to end.
Right, who's that?
I don't know.
Never heard of him. Anyway, we've got loads to talk about from the stage, so we better crack on. You just came and took a selfie with us. That's fine. We'll maybe see you in one of these bars for a beer later. You can buy us a beer later. Sorry, we were interrupted there by some people who who said they were friends of the podcast. We'll just have to take them at their word, I think.
One of them was wearing an I Must Confess t-shirt, Rich.
Oh, really? I didn't notice that.
That's
one of the Chiro t-shirts.
It is, indeed.
I didn't notice.
But anyway, I was just saying that while I was waiting to see whether Chris Froome or Adam Yates were going to be in yellow, I spotted Alistair Campbell, who was the Labour Party press attaché, the spin doctor.
Spin doctor. I don't think he likes that, but...
Either or. He was a very close advisor to Tony Blair, a big cycling fan, has a holiday home down here, always visits the Tour when it's in this area. In fact, visits it when it's, you know, when it's anywhere. Big fan of the Tour. And he was on the bus with Dave Brailsford watching the big screen they've got in the Sky bus when the incident happened. So I asked him if he was in charge of the press operation at the Tour de France, how he would be massaging the message today. Alistair, could I ask you a question? If you were running the Tour de France PR department this afternoon, what messages would you be putting out?
That it was a very, very exciting stage, and that the Ventoux always has big drama.
So, certainly does have big drama. Did you see much of the incident on the TV?
I saw it all, yeah. I was watching it live and on the bus, on the Sky bus. And it was dramatic, really dramatic. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen that, actually, where it was the live camera, and it seems they just sort of, the three of them went into it and just went down, and then next thing you know, Chris was there. He was sort of saying, where's my bike? And then he ran. I mean, I've never, ever seen anybody run like that. So, it was exciting.
I expect Dave Brailsford was having kittens.
I think he thought it was quite dramatic. And everybody on the bus did seem to say straight away that, you know, that is so clearly a fault of the Tour, or, you know, if it was a Tour bike, Tour motorbike. So I think it was fairly obvious what was going to happen, wasn't it?
Yeah, so we're just standing here at the podium and Chris Froome is back in the yellow jersey, yet to see exactly what they've done with the results. But as you say, drama on the Tour de France every day, there's nothing really like it. And you always come down here when the race is in this region, don't you?
I do, yeah. And I go to different parts of the Tour every year, and but I think the last three Ventoux we've been here, and it is always incredibly exciting, because that was, and I think I'm right in saying that where that incident happened today was where he made a break for it last time. So yeah, it's, and even the thing last night where, you know, suddenly they announced that it's only going as far as Châtelet-Renard. And you see this incredible sort of logistical chaos. It's amazing. It's an amazing thing.
So that was Alistair Campbell in this most surreal... It's sort of appropriate that we have an interview with Alistair Campbell on this day of all days. It's been an odd day, hasn't it?
It's been a very odd day. I think it's knocked us all out of our stride. I feel like I'm running uphill in cycling shoes, whatever the podcasting equivalent of that is, just winging it. Standing here in the wind, winging it. Absolutely.
Well, when a guy comes up to you with an I Must Confess t-shirt on, it does throw you a little bit.
Nice to see them.
An odd day. We'll be back to normal business tomorrow, I hope.
Well,
but you know, we're here to talk about cycling, not running.
We are. That's the most unfortunate thing, really, because the biggest stories on this tour have not been cycling related. They've been incident related. And as a journalist, that's fantastic. And there was a real buzz up there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Trying to piece together what had happened, partly because we didn't know. I mean, we had to go round and put the jigsaw puzzle together. But we want to be talking about the race and whether or not... And there will be a little bit of a question mark, because although Chris Froome was hard done by, he was a victim of the incident, as were Richie Porte and Bauke Mollema. They ended up gaining time. And as you said, Rich, we don't know what would have happened.
Over that final
because,
kilometer.
Yeah, we don't know whether, you know, what was going to happen behind. And I think that's the biggest problem, isn't it? The spectators, whether through their fault or not, are influencing, you know, have influenced the result today. The size of the crowd.
Chris Froome bust a gut yesterday to claim 12 seconds. And then today, just there's a mystery over what might have unfolded over that final kilometer. That's unfortunate for the race, because it still might be decided by a very small amount of time.
Yeah, and those seconds that he's gained today, they could be the ones. They could be the decisive time gap. And I think, you know, in the history of the Tour, I mean, this will go down as one of those days when, you know, an extraordinary thing happened. To see the yellow jersey running in basically blind panic Mont Ventoux.
It's a word, yeah.
You know, I mean, Laurence Ten Dam said in our Mont Ventoux special, Mont Ventoux, it's a crazy mountain. And it really is. I mean, it could that incident almost couldn't have happened anywhere else, perhaps. But I can't think of anything that comes close to that. I mean, the stories from the past, Eddie Merckx getting punched on the side on
1975
on Le Puy de Dôme. Yeah, that was extraordinary. I remember Robert Miller being sent off course by a gendarme in 1988 at Gouzenage in the Pyrenees, where the gendarme appeared to be directing him the wrong way off the course, and he basically rode off course and somebody else won.
Massimo Girotto.
It was Girotto, Italian rider, won that day. And in, I think it was 2000 in the Alps, it might have been Courchevel, a couple of spectators, fans on bikes, but in pro team replica kit, Kelme kit, I think, and a King in the Mountains jersey, got onto the course in the last kilometre and were pedalling along. And
was it 2000?
I think it was, yeah.
Was it there in 2005? Or wasn't the stage at Valverde one, was it?
No, it was in, I think Vironk had won. I remember they went through a tunnel. Somebody will probably
and
tell me about it.
I remember in 1999, Giuseppe Guarini went straight into a photographer on Alpe d'Huez. You know, but none of those really compare
nowhere
with the sight, the spectacle, the absurdity of the man in the yellow jersey running bikeless up a hill through a corridor of spectators wondering what the hell he's doing.
It is. When the more I think about it, the more I think it's absolutely flabbergasting.
We were standing
really
there watching it, just literally scratching our heads.
Yeah.
Going, what's going on? I don't know. I mean, I'm speechless. Absolutely speechless.
We are at a bit of a loss. But yeah, it's an excuse.
Anyway, I said earlier that I think that Froome will have hurt himself doing that. And I think that he'll have pains in his muscles tomorrow that he didn't, in muscles that he didn't know, where he didn't know he had muscles, to quote a comedian. It is a big day tomorrow, time trial, a real test. And I spoke to Tom Dumoulin, who was our peddler de charme a couple of days ago. I spoke to him at the start yesterday about the time trial because he is a favourite for Rio. I was wondering if this would be a dress rehearsal for him. Here is Tom Dumoulin. Tom, congratulations on your peddler de charme award. Is that better than the stage win?
almost.
I was going to ask you, Tom, just you've obviously got your stage win, you'll be very happy with that. But the time trial in a couple of days is a big target for you as well. Have you recced the course? Do you know the course?
My trainer did, and we have it on video. And I will we'll see it maybe after the stage from tomorrow. We will do it by car. And then maybe in the morning, we didn't finish our plan yet, but I will definitely see it before. Yeah.
I mean, it's a huge goal for you this year, obviously, at Rio. Are you looking on this as a really important sort of dress rehearsal for Rio?
Yes and no. Yes, because it's the last long TT before Rio, and then would love to do well, of course. But eventually, it's also different than doing it at TT in Rio when you're fresh and 2.5 weeks later after the tour. So it's two different things, you know. You saw it at Kirienka last year, for example, in the Vuelta, he wasn't that good in the TT, and then he smashed everyone at the World. So it doesn't really matter. It's not like if I win it, I win the Rio time trial as well, or the other way around. Yeah.
You will be up against, I guess, some of the guys who will be rivals in Rio, but you won't be benchmarking yourself against them.
Rio is a completely different course than the course in 2 days. Actually, the course in 2 days, it's hard, but it's still a time trial, you know. And in Rio, it's so much climbing that it almost turns into a climber's course, with completely different contenders, maybe like Pino or Froome, or he might be even doing well now in 2 days as well. But it's a different time trial for sure.
With Rio in mind, what are the chances of you finishing the tour?
High. Normally,
you want to finish.
Yeah, I want to finish. Yeah.
So that was Tom Dumoulin, who may well be a winner of the stage on Friday, and we'll see how Froome is affected and the others. And you know, Froome's obviously going very well. That's what we take away from the Ventoux stage, the very odd Ventoux stage. We should wrap it up there, Lionel, I think.
We should, yeah.
We'll be back with a normal episode tomorrow night.
Well, we hope so, yeah. I mean,
Maybe Froome will run the time trial.
It's 37 kilometres. It's almost a marathon, Rich.
It's pretty much marathon distance.
Yeah. Oh dear.
You know, maybe. But, I mean, he's got the running bug.
Wouldn't recommend doing it in cycling shoes, that's all.
Okay, thanks very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.